Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Recording,
everybody. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Welcome to Two Black Girls, One Rose.
Where together we'll uncover what we can learn about modern dating, love, and relationships from popular television. I'm Natasha.
And I'm Justine.
And today we have a very special, special guest, you guys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Marshall Glaze from Love is Blind Season 4 will be joining us today to share his reflections on Season 6, to catch us up on what he's been up to since his season. He's newly engaged, so we chat a little bit about his new boo thing, his new fiance. Mm-hmm. And also just to indulge us in a conversation about male mental health, how men are showing up in relationships. You know, Marshall was the nice guy, right? He wore his heart on his sleeve during his season. We loved him for that. A lot of people did not like him for that. A lot of people had criticisms for that. But how did he become that guy? And what did he make of Clay this season were two big questions we had for him for this interview. It was a fantastic interview. I'm just going to say that myself.
Y'all, it was great.
It was great.
We, as not to toot our own horn, toot motherfucking toot.
We came prepped and ready, and I commend Marshall because he came so open and honest, and we are strangers to him, and he really let us in a way that I have not seen in other interviews before. Marshall, or even that we've had on this podcast. It's really that good of a conversation and an interview, and it was such a treat to have him, and I'm so excited for you guys to hear this. You can say something.
One more thing. If you guys enjoyed our conversation about men versus women and therapy and why we're so far ahead of men and what we're doing in terms of being single and being a woman and dating in this kind of landscape, I think you will love this conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it was really cool to sit with a man and have him from his perspective, from his, and he doesn't speak for all men, he's only speaking from himself, but hear his thought process on things that you and I debated among ourselves or with the listeners or talk to therapists about. It was really interesting to bring a man into that conversation. And I think we, I walked away learning a lot, and I think he also appreciated having that space to just have this open dialogue. Excited for you guys to hear it. Before we dive in with Marshall, we do have some Love is Blind news. It's a lot happening.
Keeps tripping show back in.
The show's off, but now we have these two new people that we just are all obsessed with now. So AD was on Nick Viall's podcast. 2 hour long interview.
Yep. It's one of the only places she's answered questions. So it's a place that we have to go.
Yeah. So
you know what I mean?
I know. And I appreciate all the TikTokers, all the people in the Facebook group, everybody in Reddit, everybody who does the work of watching and listening to that man and just gives us a nice little recap. So we'll talk about the highlights. Also, I have a little update on Chelsea and Jimmy. Chelsea is also making the rounds.
Yes, she is.
And, you know, sharing her little nuggets and things about her relationship with Jimmy. And then the last little thing I have, there is a third woman from the pods who dated Matthew. We know
third?
AD. and we know Amber, but there's a third girl. And she has come forward and she has things to say.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Oh, boy.
So we'll talk about that as well. Yeah. If you want to listen to this episode ad-free, if you want to hear our juicy pre-show, our hot takes on Love is Blind news, join the Rose Garden over at Patreon. Head to patreon.com/2BlackGirls1Rose. On Patreon, you can watch us on video. You can watch Justine, our beautiful faces, alongside Marshall and in motion on video on Patreon. And you can join us for our current rewatch, our current reaction content for the week. We are now doing Broad City, and it's a great time. Try out a Patreon membership with a 7-day free trial, and shout out to the Rose Garden. Anyways, let's dive in with Marshall.
Yes, let's do it.
All right. We are so excited to welcome to the show someone you all remember very well from Love is Blind season 4. I think you were actually a pretty polarizing figure. There were those of us who were very excited to see a young Black man giving emotional intelligence, a man in touch with his feelings, a man who journals, a man who's proud to wear his heart on his sleeves. It was very refreshing to watch. But because that characterization is atypical for what we expect out of a Black man, particularly on television, you were criticized a lot. Called all kinds of names, from soft to feminine to having folks question your sexuality. But your portrayal definitely catalyzed a conversation around Black masculinity and emotionalism and mental health in men. So fresh off of season 6, where we all just watched Clay, we thought this man would be perfect, the perfect person to share his reflections on this recent season, catch us up on what he's been up to, particularly as a newly engaged man, and indulge us in a conversation about how men show up in relationships. Please welcome to the show, Marshall Glaze.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Yes, thanks for being here. You are one of so few men that we have on the show. We're so happy to have you.
We don't bring a lot of guys.
We don't bring a lot of guys here.
Oh, I'm honored.
We actually, I was just looking at our analytics recently. We just surpassed, we used to have more non-binary people than men listen to our show, and we just passed
We're
now at like 3% men and like 1.8 non-binary people. So we're getting up there. So you're very happy to see who you're going to usher into the show. But we have some warm-up questions for you, Marshall. What is or who was your childhood crush growing up?
Oh, like a celebrity or?
I think a celebrity so we can get to know you.
Celebrity.
It can't be, you know.
Sally from third grade.
Yeah.
It can't be Pookie from down the street.
No.
Who was my celebrity crush growing up? Man, that's a tough one. I haven't thought about that in a long time. it would probably have to be probably Felisa Rashad.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, we love her.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a nice
That's a good one. That is so aligned with your current fiance. She should feel really proud about
giving
that.
Giving Felicia.
What is your favorite dating show or reality show of all time?
Love is Blind. Come
stop,
on.
Stop, Marshall, please.
Is that even a question?
Just a little bias. Just a little bias.
If I'm digging into my bag, it's got to be Flavor of Love.
Oh, good one.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
it is my dream to watch and recap that on this podcast at some point in time.
What celebrity are you low-key always checking in on? So maybe you don't follow them. Michelle is just checking to see what they're doing.
It would probably have to be Will Smith. I follow him and I've always interacted with his stuff. So he's one of the guys that, you know, even though he has his shortcomings, it's still one of my idols and role models in terms of like how I want to be professionally. He just works really, really hard.
Yeah, isn't he the top grossing male actor in Hollywood or something? He has some crazy.
He has a record.
A huge record. And when you look at his filmography, it was like blockbuster, blockbuster, blockbuster. But like, there was a stretch of time.
Yeah, he had a run for a very long time.
Yeah, he did.
Did you read his book?
I did. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh, I didn't know he had a book. Nice.
Yep.
All right. Well, Marshall, we want to chat with you just about a couple things. So you went from being just like an everyday marketing manager to gaining 600,000 followers on Instagram. You have 300,000 on TikTok, and you're obviously very recognizable, I'm sure. Talk to us about overnight fame and how it's treated you.
It's a great question. It's honestly one of the hardest things that I've had to do in my life. I thought to this point, pledging my fraternity was the hardest thing I've ever done.
But, oh, wow. What fraternity are you a part of?
Alpha Phi Alpha.
Oh, you're Clay's brethren. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, well, he's an alpha?
Clay's daddy.
Oh, just his father. Oh. I see. Okay.
His pops is an alpha. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, got it. Okay.
I'm not sure if he is. Unconfirmed.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Your sources might be better than mine.
Okay.
So I thought that was the hardest thing that I've done in my life up until this point. And it is such a jarring experience to go from being just a regular person to a not so regular person. I still think I'm a regular person, but there's just some caveats to it. Mm-hmm. And so it was, I deal with anxiety and I've battled depression before and that does not help. Going through that experience did not put me in a position to help kind of just navigate that. I was doing it alone. I mean, I had my cousin Justin who was on The Bachelorette, but it's just such a different experience from the different shows and how big each show is. And so Love is Blind is just so huge and the fan base is so strong that it came on immediately. And people were talking online as if they knew me for years and they knew exactly who I was. And so coming from absolutely, and it was really just really night and day, because the day before, actually we're coming up on a year since it was released, but March 23rd, I remember it was the wildest thing. The next day I had like 15,000 followers.
Oof.
And people were in my DMs. People were texting me. People who I haven't talked to in years, texting me like, "Hey, oh, well, yeah, we just saw you, you know, the first episode drop. Oh, this has been great. Oh man, what have you been up to?" And it's just like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
wait a minute. I need to go clock into work today.
It's Tuesday.
I got to drive to the office. This is not just a normal experience. So long story short, it was very, very jarring experience that I don't think a lot of people are equipped to go through.
As you said, it's like night and day. You wake up the next day
and
now you're a figure. You're like a known person.
Yeah.
So now it's been, you said it's been a year, I guess, since your show aired. Maybe like three years since you filmed, I guess?
2 years.
2 years since you filmed. 2 years. In that time, you know, there's been two other seasons. Your season is still, I think a lot of people say, one of the best seasons of Love is Blind, but it's stale because it's been two seasons since. What's changed now in that time? How has the dust settled a little bit? How are you coping now?
Yeah, it's actually kind of crazy because my follower base is actually continuing to grow. When the season was done airing, the reunion came out and we did After the Altar. It was sitting at like, on Instagram, it was sitting at like 580. And now I checked yesterday and it's like 611. And I'm like, why? What the heck is going on? And I think it's because people are going back and watching it for the first time.
Yeah.
Because everybody was talking about season six. So they're like, oh,
yeah,
let me catch up on Love is Blind. Let me go watch season two or three, or maybe I didn't see four. Let me go watch four and five.
Right.
And so a lot of people are coming in because of that new wave of interest for Love is Blind, the franchise. Out in public, the dust has definitely settled. More regular. Yeah, I feel so much more regular. I feel like I'm having a regular human experience again. I can go and take my fiance out for dinner and we won't be bombarded with pictures and people asking us for like autographs and stuff. But
autographs.
People still do that.
People still ask for autographs.
I was actually asked to sign a golden goblet.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
People,
yeah.
What are y'all doing with these things?
It was very flattering though.
Yeah.
That was flattering, sure. because it wasn't coming from a place of like vanity, like, oh, let me get this picture to say I met you or anything. It was just like, no, I'm a fan of the franchise. Mm-hmm. You are a legacy member of this franchise. Let me get something to solidify my fan base and have a memento. And it was like, what? Okay, sure. And so when I'm by myself or with him with Shay, it's completely normal. When I'm with Kwame or Brett or a combination. Yeah.
Pandemonium.
Oh,
yeah. Yes. I'm sure.
Yeah. Kwame and I, we actually were, we were together. We went to the gym on, what day is it? It's Tuesday. We went on Saturday and we went and we played some hoops for a little bit. And then we went out to go and get some food afterwards at, it's this place in Seattle called University Village. And it's like an outdoor mall. It was a beautiful day. So there's a lot of people there and we could not even eat our food. People were just like walking by like, hey, oh my God, can I get a picture? People were like staring and pulling out their phones, trying to like walk by with the camera.
That's the worst. That is the worst.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it's a big ass show. It's a big ass show.
Huge. A lot of people watch the show.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I mean, you stated earlier that you think of yourself as a normal person. That's how you identify. I'm a regular person. I think though that the way that you use your platform and also the way that you were portrayed on the show, the vulnerability that you had on the show makes you not that regular. Like you were very emotionally vulnerable on this show. You're very emotionally vulnerable and very, I would think, helpful. People are begging you to host this reunion because of your commentary that you've done on Love is Blind, particularly season 6. And you seem very consistent from the very beginning that you want to use your newfound platform to advocate for male mental health. And while that's very noble of you, it's not exactly the most lucrative of things to stand on, right? So why did you choose to use your platform this way?
Yeah, well, I didn't go on Love's Blind for fame. I would prefer not to be famous, actually. I actually hate the term. I hate the term famous. I hate the term celebrity. I went on there for a very specific set of reasons. I went there for love, and I've always led with love. And now I'm just completely gracious and humble and thankful for everything that has come my way. All the blessings that have been bestowed upon my life. I don't take anything for granted. My life was fantastic before Love Is Blind. And so now that I've got these blessings, you know, especially with platform and an audience, people work their entire lives to get that. And I got it overnight. I feel almost indebted to society to give back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm going to give back in the ways that I feel like need to be given back to, you know what I mean? Like there are so many things. And I was just talking to somebody about this the other day. There are so many things that I would want to talk about. And I have almost analysis paralysis sometimes where there are just too many things to talk about so I just don't talk about anything. And I'm kind of just forced into a bubble like, oh, I just want to protect my peace and I want to protect my mental health. And so I just don't post anything. And so, but now I'm just like, no, I was not put on this earth. I was not put into Love Is Blind. I was not gifted this audience for no reason.
Right.
There has to be something in this that I can benefit from, but a lot of people can too. Yeah. Even if it's 2 people or 10 people, if I'm reaching at least 1 person, it changes their life. I would die a happy man, honestly. And so a lot of people, they find that hard to believe. And I'm not in the business of convincing people.
Clarifying question. They find it hard to believe that what you're saying is genuine, how you feel about your platform is genuine. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right. They find that hard to believe because like, oh, well, you went on a TV show and you did this and you did that. Like, yeah, but you don't know me. You don't know me. Anybody who truly knows me knows that what I'm saying is what I mean. Like what you see is what you get. I'm always baseline this guy. Mm-hmm. Always baseline. Whatever you saw on TV is what you get in person. Mm-hmm. That's me at a baseline. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not in the business of convincing people. Actions speak louder than words. So I'm always going to be about myself, mental health, Black people in general, mm-hmm. Black men specifically. And
Yeah, and just being purposeful, because I think you see a lot of people gain the fame and gain the followers and really just chase the coins, which is fine because they're I understand that. Mm-hmm. But I think, just being thoughtful, like I was given this opportunity. How can I be purposeful with it is very admirable. Right. Mm-hmm. So you've talked about your experience with depression, anxiety, leaving Love is Blind and breaking up with Jackie. Did you mm-hmm. go to therapy? Did you go back to therapy? Like, I guess, what was your relationship with therapy? And did you have specific areas about yourself that you wanted to improve going into another relationship?
Yeah. Fantastic questions. My form of therapy after the breakup was introspection. Mm-hmm. Because after the breakup happened, there was a definitive amount of time that we had until the show came out. And mm-hmm. so that was the time that I needed to say, okay, hey, I needed to come to grips that this was going to change my life. Mm-hmm. And that was going to be the story that was going to be portrayed. Mm-hmm. So I did not go and seek licensed therapy. What I did was, like I said, I just kind of went internal. And I talked about it with my loved ones and just kind of processed it mm-hmm. how I thought was best at the moment. I probably should have gone to therapy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when it happened, that was such a real relationship for me. You know, regardless of the frills of reality TV, it was real. I really wanted it to work. Mm-hmm. I definitely saw a future with her. Mm-hmm. And so the breakup was tough and I felt just like a piece of trash, just kind of thrown to the mm-hmm. side. Mm-hmm. And that did a lot for my self-confidence. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if I wanted to go back on the dating scene. I didn't know if love was for me, you know? And mm-hmm. so, mm-hmm. Which God was like, it's for you, my son. You're just not right now. Mm-hmm. And two or three weeks after we stopped filming, like the production crew had left, that was when I met Che, just randomly. Wow.
2 weeks.
Yeah. Like,
wow. So this is after the altar or after?
This was season 4. So Jackie and I broke up a week before the weddings. Mm-hmm. So that was, I'm forgetting the actual month, mm-hmm. but the production stayed in Seattle to finish like the, mm-hmm. the interviews, the confessional interviews.
Oh, had,
like,
I catch see.
Them up. Okay. With. So okay. they stayed for a little while afterwards. Mm-hmm. So we were probably broken up for probably a month at that point.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I was still kind of feeling it and, you know, down in the dumps. And then my boy called me and decided to pick me up and told me to lean on him. And we went mm-hmm. to this day party. Mm-hmm. After the day party, went to the restaurant. That's where I met Shay and the mm-hmm. rest was history. Mm-hmm. And so to answer your other question, Natasha, was just mm-hmm. the pieces that I gave Jackie, for the longest time, I was telling people that I gave her pieces that I couldn't get back. Mm-hmm. But what I should have been saying instead was I gave her the pieces I didn't need anymore. Mm. Those are the pieces that I didn't need, nor did I want. Mm-hmm. I was in the business of fixing people. Mm-hmm. I was dating potential and not the person.
Right.
And mm-hmm. that was always my downfall. Mm-hmm. Ever since I was a kid, that was always my downfall. Okay. I always went after the person that I saw the most potential in. Mm-hmm. And I carried that into Love is Blind. Mm-hmm. And no regrets. It happened how it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God works in mysterious ways, led me to my person now.
Right.
but when I found Shay, she was already doing the work for herself. Mm-hmm. She was already at a place of, I'm further along in my healing journey. You're damaged right now. You take the time you need. We can do this together. Mm. And that's what we did.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Damn.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. I think what you said about having Jackie having pieces that you didn't need anymore. I think we saw that in the reunion with Jessica and Jimmy. We saw that Jessica gave that letter to him and he did not say anything back. Yeah, and yeah. She said, you have a piece of me that that'll never get back. Mm. Yet she signed up for another reality show. Like, you know, it's a find love again. And I think it's interesting that you also met your now fiance, you know, very, very shortly after you gave that piece of you away.
Yeah.
And I think it is really a testament that you say that you don't need that part of you anymore. I think everybody deserves that. Everybody deserves that level of growth.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When they break up with someone. Yeah.
And not for nothing, the introspection that you did clearly brought you to a place of being very aware of like what it was you've been doing on a pattern in every relationship, dating potential. That's like a very specific thing that you recognize with yourself. So shout out to the introspection. It worked.
Yeah. And so I think that, let me just also clarify that, because inherently with dating, saying dating potential, there's there's an inherent amount of blame that shifts to the other person. I just want to kind of dial it back. There was a lot of stuff that I did wrong too. You know, I was very, very like controlling of that relationship in a sense of, we're going to make this work. I'm going to hold you tight. I'm going to make sure that, that you don't go anywhere. We're going to do this together.
Okay.
Without understanding that that is kind of what pushed her away too. She was not used to that. That's the way that I love. And I wasn't in a place to accept the way that she wanted to be loved or the way that she could love me. And that was another thing that that kind of clicked in my mind, was like, oh, damn, dude, you were almost like love bombing her. You needed to step off the gas a little bit and you needed to kind of take it in a pace that she was comfortable with and a pace that I was comfortable with.
Right.
I had no regard for how she wanted to move through that process together. And that was very wrong. And so we, in our After the Altar scene, we talked about that a little bit. I mean, a lot of it was kind of like truncated. But what we talked about that, I apologize for forcing that onto her when in the back of my mind, I was like, she wants to be with this guy. You know, she don't want to be with me.
You know,
I wasn't willing to let that go. And so, I have come to the acceptance that, in my past relationships, I was controlling, and I used love and the way that I care for somebody, to kind of control that area around us and not allow other perspectives and feelings to be heard.
Validated.
And so, exactly. And so Shay and I, we talk about that all the time. And I have gotten, I really would just want to pat myself on the back, because I've just gotten so good at allowing that outside perspective and validation to thrive in a relationship where it takes two to dance.
Right? Yeah.
That's great. Gosh. Just leaving space for the other person, really.
I am so glad you brought that up, Marshall, because we have questions about you kind of being portrayed as the good guy and Jackie being portrayed as the villain, right? And really it's because her communication skills, she was going a lot with her family, she had emotional outbursts. It's just that she was expressing herself differently than you. And she also was attached to a very aggressive, manly man caricature, right? Usually that's not a whole person that she's looking for. Really, it's a personality type. And kind of a display, right? A costume almost. And she, in the show, left you for Josh. And she looked like the villain, right? But watching yourself back and seeing how you're portrayed, and also just the question around, I think being like the good guy or the nice guy is an interesting one, because it can get really dangerous. Because
very
it can
dangerous.
See like that the good guy's always right. Did you feel like as you're story was told, that it was portrayed exactly how it went down with you and Jackie?
Yes.
Wow. But, okay. Okay.
But.
Yeah.
It went exactly how it went down. We both were in the wrong, but it's just like you said, it's the appearance of the villain. And we are so accustomed as humans to point the finger at someone who outwardly does the wrong.
Right. You know, right.
We don't look at the person who possibly is forcing that person to express or emote in the way that they did to portray them to be the, and so yes, 100% I agree with you. There were other factors at play. And it really just wasn't myself either. I just don't think that she was comfortable with the whole process. It was just so fast paced, and she just wanted to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
Which I could not fault her for being on that show. And I still will, to this day, will not fault her for being on that show. She tried, she put herself out there and it didn't work out. Cool. Whatever. I felt terrible when people were picking her apart. Terrible. She's not a bad person.
Right.
And I will say this to my, I will say it until the day. She is not a bad person. She just did bad things. And I'm a good guy, but I've done bad things. So it's like, you know what I mean? And and I'm a man. I'm okay with admitting that. I am an adult. I'm not even going to put gender. I'm an adult. Yeah. I'm okay with admitting that I did something wrong because I learned from it. And I'm not going to say, oh, I wish people hated me for it. I got my dose of hate because of some stupid shit I said when I was younger. But it's like, that does not define me as it does not define her.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like that's also the missing piece with TV, right? Because we know that inherently, right? But when you're watching a show that's highly edited and produced, and it's also a very pressure cooker like situation, you know, the nice guy who's able to regulate his emotions and keep calm is always going to seen as in the positive light. And we'll get a pass in some cases, you know. I think when we watched this current season, season six, we were talking about this offline. We saw a similar dynamic between you and Jackie and Jimmy and Chelsea, right? Chelsea communicates kind of similar, I would say, to Jackie, like a bit more expressive, some might say erratic. When you were watching this current season, how did you feel watching Jimmy and Chelsea? Did you see that similar dynamic? Did you, were you able to kind of like have more empathy for Chelsea, or was she like triggering to you?
There were parts that were triggering, but there are parts that I identify with her as well. Just because I didn't outwardly express my frustration at when the cameras were rolling, that doesn't mean that I wasn't expressing my emotions outwardly when the cameras were
right.
And so I think going back to my experience, I was just trying to regulate the temperature in the room because I knew how uncomfortable it was for her. And so I had to maintain my cool to help maintain her cool.
There it is, the good guy.
And so
saving and, everyone.
Right, exactly. Right.
True.
And so that came off as me being the cool, calm and collected guy. When in reality, when I'm having discussions with Shay, I'm not the calm, cool and collected guy. I express. I know how to regulate my emotions to an extent.
Okay.
And when it comes out and it's bad. And there are times where I'm like, let me take a step back. Let me take a deep breath. There are times when that happens. And so when people are online talking about, oh, I see right through them. Yeah, you're right. I'm not perfect.
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to be perfect. And so when people, when the season was rolling out and people are like, oh, Marshall's the perfect guy. I'm not. I don't want to be that guy. I don't put that on me just because that's what you're seeing. I think in just like you said, there's too many similarities between people who show themselves a different way on a reality show and then are picked apart for something that happens in the real world outside of the cameras and it comes out that, oh, this person emoted and they punched a wall or something. Oh, he's terrible now. Oh, he's that's just who that person has always been.
Right. Yeah.
That's how they've always been. And so I think the how Chelsea expressed herself, that's who she is baseline. Mm-hmm. And she was comfortable or drunk and expressed herself in the manner that she normally would, you know, like, but that doesn't take Jimmy off the hook. Jimmy brought that out of her too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So there's always a cause and effect.
Yeah.
And the cause was probably some stuff that Jimmy did or said or whatever their dynamic was that pulled her out of that and into her most normal self-expressive state that she just resorts to. And I could identify with that. I'm like, oh man, it was cringe, but I could identify like, okay, I see what's happening. She's going back to who she knows, she's going back to how she knows who she is. And she expresses that comfortably because that's who she is.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Yeah. I have a quick, sorry to steam for you going.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Side question about like consciousness of the cameras, right? Sometimes I feel like Chelsea said something like she forgot the cameras were there when she revealed about him sleeping with his friends. You seem to have a bit of a consciousness of the cameras, you know, because Jackie's going off and you're like, we can't both be going off. We got to kind of keep it somehow contained. Can you speak about that? Like just the cameras and like just being conscious of how you're going to be portrayed, but also try to be present in the moment at the same time.
Yeah. I would say that there were a lot of times where I forgot they were there.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. But when it came to us having conversations on camera that she visibly was inaudibly saying, I don't want to talk about this. That's when I'm like, okay.
Whoop. Yeah, we're on a TV aware. Show.
Yeah.
Let me be aware.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Cool. Okay.
This guy's over here. This guy's behind me. She says she doesn't want to talk about it. So let me try to drum some stuff up from my past to make her feel comfortable.
Oh, wow.
I always, that was our constant.
Okay.
That's probably why a lot of stuff in our relationship on camera, that's why it doesn't make sense. And that's why we probably weren't shown as much as the other couples because she didn't want to talk about stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm just, and my producer and myself, we were just constantly going back and forth with each other. Why did you do this? If you don't want to be vulnerable and talk about yourself, why are you not comfortable with doing this? You signed up for this. This is what you got.
This is the process.
It was frustrating. It was so frustrating. Looking back on it, she probably should have never been on the show. If you were uncomfortable with expressing yourself or being vulnerable and showing different pieces of who you are to the person who you said yes to, that you would marry. You know what I mean? Like there were so many opportunities for us to have really groundbreaking conversations. And honestly, up until the point of the breakup, everybody said that we were going to be the one. Everybody.
Really?
Even the other couples. Oh, you guys are so strong. You guys are going to be the next Cameron and Lauren. And up until we got our phones back, that's when everything went to absolute
fuck. Wow.
Yeah.
Why do you think that was? Is that outside influence? Is that family members in the ear?
Yeah. There were a lot of factors. I think once we started to be more comfortable with each other, when I'm really comfortable with a woman, I show all sides of me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I can be really playful. I can be, I can joke around, you know, I just let my hair down when I feel like I'm safe. I just let go.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I just be myself, whatever that is, however I want to show up in the moment. If I feel safe with you, I'm letting it out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that she liked what was let out.
Okay.
And so she took a lot of that as, oh, he got sugar in his tank. Uh-huh. No, I'm just silly.
I haven't heard that phrase in a minute. He got sugar in his tank.
No,
that's crazy.
No, I'm just having a good time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm just
feeling comfortable.
Being me, whatever it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And she did not like that. And I guess she was expressing that to her friends, and her friends were saying stuff back. And
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then they're just feeding. You know,
she had a lot of stuff
other.
Going on with her family. Yeah. Yep. There was a lot of outside factors that played into our demise. But it still doesn't take away from the fact that it caught everybody off guard. Even the producers, when we were in the pods, so this is how Love is Blind works. Love is Blind is basically matchmaking. There are matches for you there, and they pair you with people behind the scenes, and they're just like, let them go through the maze and see if they find each other.
Okay, that makes sense.
We were not paired. And my producer was like, I had no idea that you would have picked her. Why? What the heck? What is going on here? And it's because they're just very different people. We're literally opposite sides of the coin.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it took everybody by surprise. And that's why we were followed. They were like, oh man, let's just see where their story goes and have fun with it. So, we caught the producers by surprise because of how strong our relationship was in the pods and in Mexico. Everybody was like, oh my God, like you're peeling back the onion layers of Jackie Bonds. Like you are getting to the core of who she really is. She's letting her soft girl era in. Like she's, because apparently when she came into the pods, she came in trying to be like macho and, you know, like stare everybody down. And then as our dates kept going on, Tiffany would tell me that she came in there like just a whole new radiant person. And they were like, man, Marshall's doing something to her in there.
Everybody that was after was like, dates with you, she would come in.
Yeah. After. Be, okay, right. Exactly.
Okay.
Right. And so, yeah, everybody thought that we were going to make it.
Dang. Oh,
until he
didn't. Wow.
All right. Until he didn't.
Oh my gosh, that is so interesting that level of outside influence. And I even hesitate to say influence because it's probably just outside validation of whatever she was feeling, because she was questioning something. If she's telling her friends this, that, and that, she's questioning something and she just wants an answer. So male mental health, let's talk about it.
Okay.
This subject has had so many different articles, studies, podcast episodes, doctorate concentrations, all kinds of stuff. And yet it still feels like it's in the same place that it was since 2012. Like it still feels it's in the same spot, probably worse. I was just telling Natasha about a new dating coach that I saw that charges $3,000 for personal dating. Yep. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm saying, Marshall. You could be making money and you're not. This is why we asked you that question earlier. So we're starting to see also on the other side of that, a lot of these guys who are advocates for male mental health are really baiting women. They're like painting their nails and say that they're vulnerable and that's enough. And they're saying that they're advocates for male mental health and not being a typical man. But in reality, what they're trying to do is bait women into engaging with their content and therefore selling them more product. It's not actually standing up on business for a lot of stuff, right? It seems even to us as women to be really surface level. And I think that content, because too, they're baiting women with certain demeanors and ways that they edit their videos and the thirst traps that they put up, they're not even speaking to men. And we said on our podcast that therapy for men needs some new PR, because the PR around therapy is just that it's hard and you have to unpack your trauma and you got to expose your mom. And so when you tell men, do the work and uncover your childhood trauma and your family of origin, it just doesn't feel appealing. How do you think men receive other men talking to them from anything aside sports, video games, and politics? Like, how is that even received as a man?
Yeah, I think it's becoming increasingly more acceptable as other public figures are starting to.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Share more about themselves. And I think that there's, there was, in the Black community, our barber is mm-hmm. our therapist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think with Spring Hill Studios, and LeBron James, and when they created the barbershop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that that opened the door to men having vulnerable conversations outside of sports. And I know that they still talked about it, like, but it was always great conversation. And I think for guys, great conversation often leads into being vulnerable.
Feelings.
Aww. It's not like we're just sitting down like, hey man, what's going on with you? No, it's like if we're moving and grooving in conversation, if we start off with sports, we segue into, okay, well, in 12th grade, you know, when I sprained my ankle, I never went back to go play baseball and then it just starts to snowball into feelings and then where they feel like they should have been. But it's packaged differently, I think. Okay. It doesn't mm-hmm. look like mm-hmm. us intentionally sitting down and talking about our feelings. It's a segue into it.
Okay.
You know, mm-hmm. and it takes other men, honestly, like myself, and I've experienced this with Brett, with Kwame, with my cousin Justin. We have sat down and we have literally just, that was the agenda, just talking about, hey, how are you? Mm-hmm. What's married life like? How's your mental health? We've talked about those conversations, and I think that it's becoming increasingly popular as the years go on and as we start to break down certain things in terms of childhood trauma and generational curses and intergenerational trauma, all that mm-hmm, stuff. We start mm-hmm. to learn more about it, and these buzzwords start to become household nouns that we're
vernacular,
using.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Uh-huh. There's a lot more conversation around it.
Yeah, I think where we get this view of men not absorbing the mental health conversations, because you're right, barbershop did open up a lot, and there's some other podcasts that open up a lot of doors, but I think the contrast that men are going through with the Fresh and the Fit and the Kevin Samuels and the Andrew Tates of it all, they have massive platforms that have created action. And I think with barbershop, we haven't seen that action being taken place as heavily as we see it with all these other guys who are telling us that men are just women are just out to look for money or whatever they say. Right. Marshall, I tried to be a man for 2 weeks on the internet. It was awful. It's awful. I tried to rejig my algorithm to like be a man, and I was like, oh my god, I gotta get out of here.
It's a dark day.
Wow. It was fascinating.
It was crazy, but I think you're right, and I guess you stay in such a positive space in your space on the internet and you don't run into this stuff, but I guess because we're podcasters, we run into a lot more of the negative that comes around. So it seems
and there's
sad
a lot
to
of
us.
It.
There's so much of it, and it's so popular, it makes so much money.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Honestly, I forgot about that. The LeBron show, The Barbershop, it's still on? That's still on?
I think it got picked up by HBO, actually.
It got picked up by HBO, and then he has another leg. He has something else that he's doing with Iman Shumpert. He's got another.
I remember seeing like thing. Previews for it, and I was like, oh, this is a great It looks so like cinematic, the way it was filmed. It seems like such a great show. And I would think, I mean, I would think most men love LeBron. They look up to LeBron. He's one of the, you know, big role models. A lot of people would say that hearing that guy speak about mental health, vulnerability, let's talk real, would do something. But I don't know. Like, what are we missing?
It's going to take many, many years to break
of undoing
the cycle. And it's just, you know, like, there are conversations that I haven't had with my dad that I feel like I need to, because he turned 60 this year and there's only so many more years that I got to like really talk about some things that that affected me as a kid or things that I'm dealing with as a man. But it's just,
it's not going to happen.
I am personally, I'm personally afraid that, but my dad either A, will tune it out, or B, say rub some dirt in it. You know what I mean? And that's just the baseline with a lot of black men.
Yeah.
We don't talk about feelings. That's white people shit. That's not what we do. Why? I'm not less of a man because I want to talk to you about some things that you said to me when I was 12 years old that I still internalize to this day, and it apply it to my life. You know what I mean? I'm not less of a man because I battle with depression and I have had strange thoughts for many years now. You know, I'm not less of a man for that.
You're human.
I'm more of a man for bringing it to you.
But
a lot of brothers don't see it that way.
They see the total opposite. Do you think you have to have those conversations with your dad before you get married? Is that important to you?
A lot of it is, a lot of my personal fears of marriage come from my dad. Personal fears of fatherhood come from him. And there are a lot of, I emulate my dad. I think he's very strong black man, very family oriented. He's dedicated to himself and to his craft, but he has shortcomings. And I think with me emulating that as a kid and looking up to him and idolizing that, I internalized a few of those things and I'm scared. I'm scared that when my son or my daughter comes around, I'm going to be short-tempered, impatient, emotionally unavailable. I'm afraid that when it comes to my marriage, I'm going to look to fill the void of my golden years or the glory days, I should say, you know, fill that void and go out and drink with the boys and reminisce and all that stuff. And it scares me. Genuinely scares me. And I do need to have a conversation with him about that. I just don't know if he is ready for it.
That's okay. I think that's okay though. You can't be married to that outcome. I really want him to say this. I really want them to do that. I think that's with anybody when you're talking about these deep conversations within relationships, right? What do you think, Natasha?
And I think the expectation is our fathers generally aren't really ready or prepared for these conversations. Like, unfortunately, unfortunately, the burden is on us. So I think we're the most self-aware generation that there's been. Gen Z is even more self-aware than us. Like, it's really, unfortunately, the burden is on us to kind of trigger a lot of those conversations and go in with the expectation that they're not really going to be prepared or, you know, might not even be open. It might take them a while to warm up, you know. So I wanted to ask about kind of your family of origin, and you know, we saw you on season 4 as like very sensitive, emotional, like very vulnerable, obviously, and really demonstrated that black men are not a monolith, right? The hypermasculinity we're used to seeing and experiencing with black men, you were very much a like refreshing divergence from that. I would say Brett as well. How have you always been comfortable with emotions? Like, did it start with someone in your family? Like, how did Marshall become Marshall?
Yeah. First of all, thank you for saying that. That was very nice to hear. I think I can just attribute to being raised by my mom. She is very self-aware. She is very sensitive. She knows a lot about emotions and how to communicate. So I would say, and I said this to Shay the other day, I had like a stroke of genius. I learned how to be a man by a woman. Mm-hmm. I didn't learn how to be a man from a man. My mom taught me everything that I know as an adult. And I've just applied a lot of that and said, oh, that's how to be a man. And so back when I've always been the sensitive person. I've always been the emotional one. Leave it to my brother and sister. They would say that I was the one who who was always crying, who was always lashing out and always angry or whatever, just had like a lot of emotions. And so I've always been that way. I just kind of refined pieces of myself as time went on. So there are actually times where I don't feel like I'm an adult, or I don't feel like I'm a man, where I feel like I'm still that kid. And that bothers me because I'd never truly learned what a man is from a man. I've watched it on TV. I've watched it in movies. I've looked at other. I've looked at my fraternity brothers, my those who are married. You know, those who have kids. I've looked at them. I've taken pieces, the ones that I like and the ones that I don't like. I just kind of forget about it. But there's something about learning how to be a man from someone intentionally teaching you how to be one.
Yeah.
And I never got that.
Right. Yeah. And the lived experience of being a man too. Yeah.
Out of curiosity, do you have a friend or anybody in your life that has had that experience where their dad, like, I'm so curious what that even looks like. Their dad like sat them down, or their uncle or their male figure and was like, this is what you do. Like,
Yeah. I know a lot of brothers who have had that, and it's like a spectrum. Like they on this side, on like the negative side, it's like, we're going to teach you how to be a toxic man.
Yeah. Right.
Or we're going to teach you how to be a positive man. So a lot of my boys are on the negative end of the spectrum, because it's like a lot of their pops were, you know, criminals, drug dealers, all this stuff. Like, I grew up in Baltimore, you know, like that's just what it is out there. But then on the positive side, I have seen from a lot of my white friends, just dads who are just super positive, very encouraging, and always there, and like, whatever you need, son, I'm here. I'm not saying that doesn't happen within our Black community, but it happens less. It happens a lot less. I've witnessed it. Like, I've been to sleepovers when I was a kid, and I have staunch memories of my white friends and their dads coming in, and if they fell and they scraped their knee, like, oh, how do you feel right now, Johnny? You okay? How does that?
Yeah.
Oh, let me blow on it, or let me get some ointment or something. Let me get a Band-Aid for you. Black dads be like, yo, rub some dirt on that. Get back out there and do it again. You know what I mean? There's a time and place for everything. I can see both. Like, that's teaching you resilience. That's teaching you hard work. That's something that we as Black people have had to endure for generations. But there's a time and place for softness, and there's a time and place for emotions. And a lot of us don't get that.
I think there's a time and a place for softness for sure. And I think it's just, we see it definitely as a Black white thing, but I think it's just also, it just really brings to the relationship of masculinity among Black men, and just like how fragile it is. So for you to, I'm not surprised to hear you say, like, I saw it at the households of my white friends a little bit more often than I did at the households of my black friends. Mm-hmm. Not to say it doesn't exist at the households of the black friends, but it's not surprising that you saw it less as well.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And there's, I think what you said is so interesting about your friends on the toxic masculinity side and your friends whose dad have been in trouble with the law or have chosen other career paths. I think with what they're doing is protecting their children the best way they know how.
Yeah.
By teaching them how to be outside because they don't want to be worried when they're out doing a double and their child's out in the street. They don't want to be worried about their kid. And so they're going to harden their kid up to make sure that they can survive in their environment.
And so I learned that in adulthood. And so, you know, I've forgiven my pops for a lot of stuff because he only dealt with the cards he was handed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And he was only equipped with certain tools to help raise kids. So I can't fault him for that. He's human.
Yeah.
He did the best he could. My dad was always there. One thing that I learned from my dad is showing up for your kids, whether that's financially or just time. Mm-hmm. My dad was always around. If I needed to call, he'd pick up the phone. If I needed some money for books in college, what do you need? Mm-hmm. It wasn't always like, okay, here's the money. It would be some attitude attached to it, but he did it.
Yeah.
And I will always be forever grateful of my dad for everything he's taught me. And I'm very appreciative of the man that he is. But there are shortcomings.
So on this note, you know, watching the season, we saw Clay really struggling to define what kind of husband he wanted to be. Like, he knew exactly who he didn't want, like what not to be, but couldn't really define how he could show up for AD. And that was really where he was struggling to say, to get himself to say yes. He also talks a lot about, you know, not having strong role models and his dad didn't teach him how to be a husband. And he talked about watching Brett on season 4 and how he learned from Brett. Now that you're engaged, how did you, or how are you defining what kind of husband you wanted to be or want to be? Also considering everything you're saying now with your father and the types of, you know, conversations that still need to be had.
Yeah, it's a living document. It's like a Google Doc. I'm always adding to it. I'm always going back and I'm changing things. She goes in, she adds things, she changes things. That's how I view my evolution into being ready to be the husband, because my version of being a husband, there are pieces that won't necessarily work for her. So we are constantly working through things. I've learned so much about myself. And she is honestly,
it's okay, Marshall. Mm. We love feelings over here. It's okay.
She has given me so much grace.
Yeah. Mm.
And so much time and patience. And I'm incredibly grateful for the woman that she is because she came at the right time. She came at the right time for the period that I am in my life. And there are so many times that I have grown at her expense and I am just like, I'm forever indebted to the time that she has taken to pour into me when I couldn't pour into myself. And I can see that with AD and Clay, you know? I can see how frustrating it was for her to give herself to a man that was growing and experiencing change and wanting to be better, but just didn't know how. Mm-hmm. And I am in no way, shape, or form defending this man. I don't know him from Adam. We've had conversations. Mm-hmm. I've identified with pieces of him. I don't know if it was for the cameras. I don't know if it was genuine, whatever. But if we're just talking from a purely observational standpoint, I can see the conflict within him. And I can see that he maybe wanted to be a husband and maybe wanted to do it the right way for her, but just couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And she was the epitome of grace. And she was the example that you can change and you can be better for yourself and for someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And right. I really like that dynamic between them. It kind of sucks that they didn't make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that would have been a really awesome marriage for the both of them, but it would have been so much growth for Clay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely growth for him. And it's interesting because you said you met Shay like soon after, right, breaking up, and very early in your healing process. And she was ready, willing, and able to like do that work with you and be alongside you in that journey, which is very noble of her, right? But it's also a lot to ask somebody too. Mm-hmm. And it's still a choice that she has to make. And we can't fault, you know, the ADs of the world who say it's not for me.
Right.
But we also can always kind of see into the future, like, man, if she said yes, Clay and her would be so great. They'd be unstoppable. Mm-hmm. But also we can't blame her for not wanting to, or we can't blame him for not being ready. It just, yeah, it's a choice for both people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. 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 I think on this season of Love is Blind, not only did we see Clay and AD go through this real give and take dance that they were doing, mostly taking on Clay's part and giving on AD's part, but we even saw a moment on that reunion with Jimmy saying that his female friends are his real outlet for vulnerability and emotions, and that that's why he keeps a lot of females around him. And out of curiosity, your friend group, you said that you, Kwame, Brett, you guys all hang out. You just were with Kwame on Saturday. What do your friend groups look like? You said they have an agenda for when you guys get together to talk about feelings. Do you have a couple of females that you keep around to dump your emotions on like these other guys do?
Yeah.
Or are you keeping track with your male friends too?
Yeah. Agenda was,
yeah, you know,
I
get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Intention. You want to be intentional with the times. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah. My friend group, I keep friends. That's one thing about me. I'm a keeper friend.
Hmm.
My two closest girlfriends are my sisters who I met in kindergarten. And, you know, we've grown together. We are now living in different cities. There's babies involved. There's mm-hmm. marriages. Like we're growing together, and we always hold each other accountable for our goals and growth. And we're always checking in. We don't talk that often, but when we do, we be talking. Mm-hmm. We hit on all the main points. How are you feeling? How are you doing? What are you mm-hmm. doing? How can we support? And that's our baseline. That's how we talk to each other. And then my guy friends, I've kept a few friends from high school. I've kept some friends from college, and that's my circle. I've got my fraternity brothers. Those brothers hold me down. I got, my line brothers. One passed away. But you know, I've got pro fights. I've got neophytes, chapter brothers,
wow,
international, like just wow. a really yeah. solid a lot of foundation
community.
Yeah.
A lot of community around that.
Is that so, something you seek out or like for survival? You have a lot of community around you.
I thrive in mm-hmm. social settings mm-hmm. and not just going out to the bars or mm-hmm. the club or whatever. No, like let's go for a walk, or let's go play some basketball or something, you know, like just get out the house and be mm-hmm. amongst the people. That's where I thrive, and that's where I recharge my batteries. So whenever I go back home, I always make it a thing, because my blood brother and my father mm-hmm. were all alphas. So
oh wow,
we all yeah. Whenever I come home, My dad's house is the meeting spot for all the brothers. We all kind of just there. We hang out. We drink. We eat, and we're just jovial. So, community is huge. It helps tremendously with mental health. It helps with financial issues if you need it, or if you needed a laugh, whatever. You know,
When you were pledging alpha, was it in the back of your head that your dad was an alpha?
Yeah.
And you had to? Yeah. Did your dad make rules like you had to? I'm just saying this personally because my mother
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I mean, even his dad, my grandfather was an alpha. So
Oh my God, legacy.
Runs, yeah.
No wonder it was so hard for you to pledge. Okay. I get
deep.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. It runs deep. It runs deep. And so they were actually... There was a time, just like real quick story. There was a time where my brother was saying that he didn't want to pledge. And then it just kind of came out that, hey, I got a probate tomorrow. I'm like, huh? And so I thought that was free game. Like I was going to go and do my little pledging and then I would be the son.
Oh, that'll be the alpha. Okay.
And, and then it just turned out to be even more sweeter that my brother was an alpha.
Yeah,
pledged before me. And then I came the semester after him.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you guys are close in age. Wow. Yeah. Oh, that's cute. Yeah.
Oh, that must have been so nice for your dad.
Yeah.
That must have been nice.
It's really nice hearing you talk about all the community, all the people around you, all the men, all the positive men, role models, peers, that have really helped kind of shape you, I would say. When we're watching Love is Blind in the male quarters, you see a lot of that community, right? And you guys are all strangers, like to my knowledge, you guys don't really know each other before, but you see a lot of tears, a lot of vulnerability, a lot of guys leaning on each other and like really opening up. I imagine many of the guys are doing like the emotional thing for the first time. Like we literally saw Clay in real time opening up and doing it with the guys in the pot, like these strange men in the quarters. I almost imagine because of this conversation of a lot of men aren't very comfortable with emotions and doing the emotional thing that at some points in the quarters, it might feel like the blind leading the blind, right? Or just maybe there's like a few guys there that like do emotions. And so they're like helping guide everybody along. Did you feel that kind of essence in the pot in the quarters? Did you feel as if the men could use additional professional support or emotional support? I think the woman too, they could use it too. Like, what was your sentiment of like how y'all were like helping each other in that very crazy situation?
Yeah. The blind leading the blind. That's a,
that's what it was. Damn. That's I was hoping you'd say no.
Me too.
That's a big one.
Okay.
That's a big
one.
Because,
there were a few of us who were, stewards of emotions. We helped kind of channel others into the direction of leaning into their emotions, and it would have helped to have someone there professionally off camera to just kind of navigate that. Because I'm not a therapist. Kwame's not a therapist. Nor is Brett. And so there were some therapists on the lady side, so I'm sure that they were coping just fine. But on our side, it was kind of like, all right, guys, we're going to dump you into this emotional soup and you either sink or you swim. And it was tough for a lot of folks, you know, really for Brett. He's opened up on podcasts and interviews about, you know, his shortcomings when it comes to emotional availability in the past. And I feel like that's where Brett and I really got our start to our friendship was when I just came in from a date and he was just sitting down. And I think it was actually on the season. He was sitting down at the table to the right and he was just like, he had this solemn look on his face. It was like he was contemplating. I could see the wheels turning. And this is closer to the date where we had to choose who we were going to propose to. And he was just kind of going back and forth with his own personal stories and battles of why he doesn't tell people he loves them and why he doesn't think marriage is for him and all that stuff. And I'm just like, dude, lean into it. You have got to, this is your moment. This is your opportunity to seize everything that you've ever wanted in life when it comes to marriage, love, and happiness. Mm-hmm. This is your moment. You are not here for no reason. None of us are.
Right.
And so you need to own that feeling, sit in it, but don't stay there. Mm-hmm. You have got to pick yourself up. You've got to go in that room and you've got to tell her that you love her and you've got to ask her to marry you. You've got to marry this woman. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, smooth sailing for Brett.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Truly. Oh, yeah. We were just talking about Brett and Tiffany. They were like perfect. Yeah. Like we saw no cracks at all. And I'm sure they exist. They're humans, but
yeah.
It was really unbelievable to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this season, watching Clay was a little different watching you and Brett. Particularly as you said, Brett was so, you know, you fired him up and then he was ready. And then him and Tiffany kind of just like sailed off into the sunset. Clay, this season just seems so terrified of marriage, right? You, on the other hand, were like the most ready 27-year-old I'd ever seen. What made you want to get married? For us, we live in the Northeast, so 27 is like young to us to get married. What made you ready to get married so young? Where did that confidence, that readiness come from?
Yeah. I'd always been the hopeless romantic. I've always wanted to ride off into the sunset with my bride and start a family. And, you know, just I've always wanted that. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember a time where I haven't written poems about love or written stories about the perfect, you know, because I'm a Shakespeare guy too. So, you know, I'm into that kind of stuff. I'm into romance. And so going into this experience, I was ready because I had already been to the engagement part before. So before Love Is Blind, I was engaged before. Okay. I was engaged at 22, and it dissolved in the pandemic.
22? Oh.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Were you in Seattle at this time, or are you in Baltimore?
I was in Baltimore and then got a job in Berkeley, California, moved out to Berkeley, pandemic hit, and we just decided it just wasn't for us.
Okay.
Way too young. Way too young.
22.
Super,
you were new to this. You're young. Like, I can do this commitment
super
thing.
Young.
Yeah,
super young. Super young. And so, yeah, Natasha, that's no, like you hit the nail on the head. I was already ready to, I was ready to be committed. I knew what it meant to be committed. Mm-hmm. And I was not afraid of commitment or engagement. I was more afraid of the production of it. I was more afraid of the other side. And my fears came true, but I didn't close myself off to that. So I'm actually a little bit, I was very proud of myself that I didn't allow my fear to take me home because I did see that through. And the reason why I was there and the woman that I chose, why I chose her, that stayed in season 4.
Mm-hmm.
I needed that to evolve into the man that I need to be for Shay.
Yeah. Right. So, right. Oh, wow. Yeah.
That checks out.
Yeah. Oh, Marshall, I love how you're telling us about your journey and all these lessons that you've learned. It seems like you're really constantly evolving. I like it when people don't say they're evolved past tense because you are a constantly evolving human. You're a young guy, as we said. And your fiance, Che, is gorgeous, educated. She loves mental health and wellness. She's a doctor. She's just like all around a bad bitch. And she's also the archetype that we see is the example, right, of a lot of high achieving Black women who are a lot of the time they're single. How were you attracted to this woman and not intimidated by this woman?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that type of woman never scares me because my mom is.
Yeah.
She is, I've been around very, very powerful women in my family. Mm. My mom, my aunt, their sisters, even on my dad's side, like I have very accomplished women around me that help shape me into the man that I am. Mm-hmm. And so I was never intimidated by that. Never intimidated by a woman making more money than me, working harder than me, more accolades, more acronyms behind their name. That never crossed my mind, ever. And what attracted me to her the most was just how genuine she always is. She has this incredible moral compass, because you have to have that when you're in healthcare. When you apply that to your friends, your family, and everyone around you, that's hard work. And I saw that from the minute that we started talking to each other to the second that I proposed to her. She is a stellar woman, and she's got so much ambition and drive, and not just for her professional career, but for her personal life. She wants to do so much, and she's always thinking about the next thing to help get her to the next point in her life and how to evolve and continue evolve. Like that she is so admirable to that point that it inspires me to be, to get to the next level. And I saw that from jump. And I'm very, very incredibly blessed to be with her. A lot of people, when we had announced that we were together, a lot of people were commenting on her page like, you're so lucky to be with him and yada, yada, yada. I'm like, hell no, I'm lucky to be with her. I'm nobody. Look at what she's done with her life.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing, Marshall. I think just as a stranger to you, right? You opened up by saying that you struggle with things like depression, anxiety, a lot of things that a lot of people struggle with, especially now, but you don't let a lot get in your way. You power through a lot, and you power through a lot of like emotionalism and a lot of vulnerability and a lot of things that people can't do. And then you put it out on TV for everybody to watch. That is a strength that a lot of people don't have. And I think you should add it to your bio.
Oh, thank you, Justine.
Yeah. So we're going to end on a couple of listener questions. We asked some on Instagram, and so we're just going to go through some quick fire ones. Did you ever consider going on The Bachelorette after seeing Justin's season, or were there any other dating shows that you considered aside from Love is Blind?
Nope. Never.
No. Oh, wow. Okay.
Never. Never, never, never. I honestly, outside of watching Flavor of Love when I shouldn't have been watching reality TV, I had not seen any reality TV in my adult life outside of my cousin's show, The Bachelorette. So I had no desire to go on it. It wasn't until that I was approached to be on Love is Blind that I reached out to Justin and said, hey, should I do this? Like, what is this? I never heard about it. So he was like, yeah, I mean, you should do it. I think it's a great opportunity. You're always looking for love, and I think that you're the right person for this show. So that's why I did it. So Love is Blind. Thank Justin for me going through that process.
Wow. That's incredible, because Justin made it very, he was runner-up, right? He made it very far.
Yeah.
And so
until she sent him packing.
I know.
Oh my God. Outside. I remember that. Oh my God.
Just a little cousin rivalry going on here. Sure.
So another question we got was about your casting process. You mentioned that you were approached to go on Love is Blind. Mm-hmm. So did they find you in the line at Cava? Where did they find you?
I wish. Cava's delicious. They found me, and this is the wildest story. I was working at the advertising agency that brought me up to Seattle after the breakup in Oakland. And I was sitting around my coworkers, and I got this text message from a Gmail account. And I'm looking at the text message, and I'm like,
God.
This is spam.
They're talking
about Love is Blind, and like, is this a reality show? And then because this was on the heels of Justin's show coming out. And so Justin was popular. And so people were like saying, oh, Glaze, you're from Baltimore. Your last name is Glaze. oh, so there were a lot of people in the office who were fans of Justin.
Oh, I see. So that's nice.
I only watched it because of him and because other people were telling me to watch it. And so I thought that they were playing a joke on me, that someone was like saying, Love is Blind wants to cast you to be the next reality TV star. So I was like, who is playing this joke on me? Which one of y'all? And everybody was just like, what are you talking about? And so I looked at it again. I'm like, oh, shoot, this is real. I got to go take this phone call real quick because the casting manager wanted to FaceTime me so he could show me his credentials, show me his ID, all that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So he found my phone number from an old portfolio that I had uploaded to my LinkedIn in like 2015.
Damn. They doing that type of FBI work.
They are some sleuths. They scrolled through my LinkedIn, found this portfolio, scrolled all the way to the bottom of the portfolio to where the contact me and work with me is. And they were like, so you want to be on a reality show? Crazy, right?
That is crazy.
Yeah.
That also is so crazy because the type of FBI work to find your number, but then they didn't know that Trevor had a girlfriend. Like,
what? Oh my God.
Whatever.
Oh my God.
That don't make no sense.
Oh my Lord. We can get into the Trevor and Jerame of it all. But last question is, do you get to see any sunlight when you're in the pods? Or is it just you're in the Costco warehouse?
We were in that Costco warehouse until we had to go to the bathroom. And then when we had to go to the bathroom, they called it a 10-1.
That was
for bathroom.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, 10-1, we're going. And then they would take us in groups to the bathroom. They would escort us. And as soon as you hit like the doors to go outside, it was just like, boom, suddenly we were all like,
oh my God.
I know. Blinded by the lights.
You didn't know what time it was.
Yeah, like a casino.
They had like a digital clock on the stove that was in there, but it was always changed. There was a guy who had his watch, and they didn't realize that he had his watch until like day three. They were like, oh no, give us that. So that was the only way that we knew what time it was.
Oh,
that one guy is the watching.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Contraband watch.
That's crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Crazy, right?
I have a question. And maybe I'm sure you guys have talked about this in interviews. I just don't remember. You guys don't sleep in the men's quarters. Like you guys are sleeping somewhere else and then they like bring you in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hence the bathroom being somewhere else and not everything.
Right. Okay.
Wild television. Yeah. So fascinating. Yeah.
Television. That's the magic of TV,
that's
baby.
The magic. I know. That's so wild. Oh my God. Anyways, Marshall, thank you so much for being here. This is a really, really awesome conversation.
Yeah.
Always, I applaud you for just how vulnerable and you just very much show up as yourself. And we wish you all the best. We wish you and Shay all the best. We'll be watching you.
Thank you.
We're among the 600,000 on Instagram, so we'd be watching you.
Well, ladies, I appreciate both of you. Thank you so much. Thank you for creating a safe space for people like myself to come on here and just kind of let loose. And I really appreciate your professionalism. I love that you guys use Riverside. I use it for my own stuff. And
nice.
You're very prepared. Questions were on point. Conversation flow. It was fantastic. One of 10 out of 10. One of the best interviews I've ever had.
Oh, wow.
So
thank you so much, Marshall.
Yeah. We appreciate that.
Yes.
Can you share just like where people can find you? Any exciting things you're working on? Anything you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah. You can find me on Instagram or TikTok at Marshall Glaze. And stuff that I'm working on, just trying to set up the wedding. We've kind of honed in on some wedding planners. We've decided where we want to have it, what year. But you know, more to come on that.
Yes.
We're still trying to figure out how public we want it to be private we I'm working on a couple of things with Kwame and Justin. So by the time people hear this, this comes out tomorrow, right?
This comes out tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, working on some cool things with them, and I'm working on my own personal projects. Maybe a book.
Maybe. Exciting. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Nice. Yes. Well, thank you, Marshall. Again, everybody go follow him in all the places and look out for all his projects. Please, Marshall, give us the wedding content we need.
Yes,
wedding
please.
Planning content. Please. I don't know if I should talk to you or Shay about that, but that'd be really nice. Thank you. Everybody, rate, review, subscribe. We'll be back next week. See you then.
Bye, guys.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.